Hey, this is Bo.
And this is Aaron.
And we are
Mash the Controller.
You're listening to Third Eye Radio.
Listen outside the box.
Ever want to host your very own radio show?
Yeah!
Darling, I will be loving you.
Third Eye Radio is looking for on-air personalities to join our team. We're looking for music show hosts, sports talk hosts, alternative news hosts, and more. Contact management at thirdeyeradio.com. That's management at thirdeyeradio.com.
Hi, this is Cecil Archbold of Cecil Archbold Voiceovers. And if you've enjoyed the quality content on Third Eye Radio, including the voiceover audio tracks, and you need some voiceover work produced for your station or business, then check out my website at www.cecilarchboldvo.com or text CECIL to 77948 for samples of my work, which include Johnson & Johnson, Subway, Lenac, and the Columbus Dispatch. At Subway Restaurants, we're all about helping you find the perfect match. Lenac's electric actuators allow your workspace to move with you at the simple touch of a button. The Columbus Dispatch is your resource that goes beyond what you already know. Then, contact me, Cecil Archbold, via the contact form on my website when you're ready for some high-quality production voiceover talent. And continue listening to Third Eye Radio for more great content.
Hi, I'm Alanis Morissette.
This is Ashton Kutcher from That 70s Show.
Hey, what's up? This is Ashley Simpson.
You're listening to the new Third Eye Radio. How radio is meant to be heard.
The following presentation may express views and beliefs that are not necessarily those of Third Eye Radio, Third Eye Radio Network, and the Third Eye Radio Management Team. Thank you for listening to Third Eye Radio.
You are now listening to the Mokita Report with your host, Dara, a show discussing learned knowledge with open minds and open discussion. You can join the discussion by tweeting at Third Eye Radio. And now, the Mokita Report with Dara, right here on Third Eye Radio Network.
Alrighty, good evening, everybody, and welcome to another edition of Mokita Report with the incorrect intro. So I apologize once again, Northern Light Star, Mr. Joel, joining me from Northern California. How you doing this evening?
Good, good. How you doing out there, folks? We got Pat with us today. He stepped in last minute, so.
Awesome. Our special patronymous guest, Pat. How you doing, Mr. Pat?
Aloha from the 808, peoples.
Great to have you again with us.
I'm glad you have me.
So. Awesome. And we've got a special guest tonight, the Kiwi from the NZ, Mr. Vinny Eastwood, Mr. News himself. How are you doing tonight, Vinny?
In New Zealand, we pronounce it NZ.
I knew that. All my friends in Canada are like, Zed's dead, baby. Zed's dead.
Well, there are, as they say in baseball, swing and a miss.
Right. Okay, so strike one. How you doing?
Well, you know, borderlining on fabulous, I guess.
Right on.
My wife just got over 6 weeks of not working and not bringing in an income, and that's come to an end today. So she's back at work and stuff like that. But things have been a struggle, man.
Well, congratulations to her. Let her know that we said awesome, and we're keeping our thoughts for you guys. I know you kind of struggle with all of us in the alt news world, and how are you getting by? How's it working out for you?
Well, I wonder if removing yourself from the struggle stops you from actually caring about how your fellow man is living and how they're actually what they have to deal with,
right,
on a day-to-day basis, you know, that kind of thing. If you're at 30,000 feet and you don't see the ground, how would you know what it's like really living on it?
Yeah,
kind of thing. So
I don't know.
Just thinking about that earlier today about how hard is it really to be a people's man when you don't live like the people live.
Right.
Yeah. Perception. Yeah. Or how we perceive our realities. Yeah, it's a very interesting concept. That's most of how theology and so forth go about life. Changing your perception to change your reality.
Right.
We also get a lot of that out of our media, too, where they give us something that's not real and try to make it reality. Yeah.
Mm. Perception is not reality. For example, one might perceive that he can fly and jump off a building. One might perceive that he's bulletproof and shoot himself in the head.
The perception deception.
Well, all right, so what I mean by that is, like, is the glass half full or half empty?
Oh, sure, I know. And believe me, it's freaking half empty because the bankers drank the first half of it before they even got here.
Right.
You know, it's like positive thinking doesn't stop tyrannical sociopaths who are in charge of the world from being in charge. Right? Positive thinking doesn't do that. Positive action does that. And it's indeed cause and effect that is what karma truly is. I did something, and something happened because I did it.
Right.
That's what karma actually is. Not, I do good things, and therefore good things will happen to me. Right. I mean, everybody here, I'd assume you'd think that you're all good people, but you nonetheless got screwed over by sociopathic scumbaggery mother effers at some point in your life, didn't you?
Yeah.
I rest my case.
Hey, guys, before we go any further, Vinny, can you back your mic off a little bit? And Joel, can you up your mic a little bit?
Okay, yeah, we can do that.
Thank you.
How's that, brother?
Much better.
Okay.
Can you hear us fine?
Yeah.
I can't hear myself in my ears now, but that's all right.
Oh. You love to hear yourself too, huh?
Well, it's when you're a musician and you're jamming and that kind of thing, how you think you sound in your head isn't necessarily how you sound out your mouth. And so if you've got a fold-back speaker pointed up at you that doesn't feed back, you can actually hear how you sound and adjust your voice accordingly. And I found the same's true for talk radio in a large degree.
Yeah.
Now, but yes, I do. Love to hear my
sweet.
The files that are in charge. Could you put down some names for us?
The pedophiles that are in charge.
Well, there are pedophile rings. There are pedophile rings that are coming undone as we speak in different parts of the world. People that have been protected.
Absolutely. But which specific pedophile rings are you talking about? Do you want to talk about the New Zealand pedophile rings that are run through the Child, Youth and Family Services who are working with gang members and that kind of thing? Can't really tell you the names or remember them off the top of my head. There's, of course, the Podesta emails, which have seen that Podesta's indeed involved in Pizzagate and that kind of thing. That's a name. But what's problematic is that the pedophile rings are rings within rings, and they are inserted into everything. The military in particular is very, very heavily involved in military trafficking. Child trafficking, because they've got all the best technology to keep tabs on people who might expose them or kill those people who try. And that's what a lot of people don't really get, is that there's often big Air Force bases that I think, who was it? Douglas Dietrich, I think, was telling me this, that there was one particular Air Force base where they had like 80 kids in a room or something like that, and they were coming out with like 30, 40 venereal diseases and stuff like that, you know, just like your stomach instantly starts to churn at the thought of that. And that's the reason why pedophilia doesn't really get discussed, brought up, or exposed, because it makes people feel freaking sick just even bringing it up.
Yep.
And they don't want to talk about it, and therefore it continues.
Not brought up because some of the elite are involved in the trafficking and the use of it as a tool and a weapon?
Well, sure. But also, the people who have actually been victims of this are often suffering complex post-traumatic stress disorder, which can sometimes make them appear really psycho or really crazy. So often the people that would actually be in the witness box testifying against these people could be discredited because they're a little bit loopy because of the trauma that was inflicted upon them by these people.
Yeah.
Right? It's a perfect system. They really, really thought this one out.
You said you had a ring in New Zealand that got broken earlier. Is it possible that the people in your government were part of that?
Oh, no, it wasn't broken. Oh. And I said it was government run, and it still is to this day.
So, and they're still getting away with it.
Oh, absolutely. Wow. Completely unabated. And court records, there's no court records at all. So every time that somebody goes in to try and sue them or prosecute them or do anything like that, records, gone. The whole records. And the judges can say, turn the cameras off. No, you can't film. No, you can't report this, or it's contempt of court. So they've gotten a really good ring down here, so they control the media, they control the law enforcement, they control the judges, and they control much of the establishment, and of course the politicians who pass all the laws protecting pedophile rings.
And so by controlling the information, they're able to maintain their power and so forth, because we've had the same problem in this country.
It's a new world order. There is no country. It's exempt.
The Clinton Foundation, in connection with the UN troops that have been down in Haiti, are being investigated for this as we speak. And from the knowledge I know about UN troops, they're wanted for a lot of war crimes across the world, and a lot of it has to do with pedophilia and trafficking, human trafficking.
Yeah, the UN, DynCorp, and were the two big organizations I heard internationally that were running children, the other being the militaries. Of the world.
Of different governments and agencies, yeah. And the main reason I feel that they get away with it is enough of the population doesn't know it.
Yeah. Well, and again, as I said earlier, they don't want to know once you start explaining to them how freaking bad it is.
Well, because usually if you're an innocent or naive person, you don't want to hear about stuff that you would not be able to deal with. And this is also one of the ways they're able to get away with it.
Well, it also sounds completely unbelievable that, hey, you know, there's all incredibly honorable, upstanding members of your societies, your doctors, your lawyers, your politicians, your business leaders, your clergy, etc. They're all involved in a gigantic global pedophile ring. All right. And they rape and kill and wear the innards of children. Okay, like, bro, this is not something that somebody's going to instantly believe you on. You know, I'm going to have to see some evidence, but I don't want to look at the evidence because that sounds way too freaking scary, man.
Yeah, exactly. It kind of reminds me of the whole Sandy Hook thing of why people would say, how could you say about children? How can it be a hoax? How can you say it about children? Have you seen any photos? Well,
I think it was who was it? Jay Widener and the Corbett Report, you know, James Corbett?
Yes.
He said that this is the, oh, it's too bad, it's too horrible, you can't say that technique. Whereas how bad the incident is, that's the same level of amount that you're not allowed to question it.
Right, yeah.
Something really bad happened, so there's this massive amount of you can't question it that goes with it.
There's a scumbaggery hypocrisy for you.
From back in the day that moved down to New Zealand, but I don't know a lot about your laws. I know that in Europe now, if you say certain things that go against the government opinion, they try to turn it into hate speech, and you are prisonable, finable by what we're talking about right now. Mm-hmm. We'd be getting in trouble in certain places in Europe just for talking about what we're talking about. How are the laws in New Zealand when it comes to your First Amendment or free speech?
They're pretty good and pretty bad, basically. If you're talking about all sorts of mainstream issues, like, oh, the climate's changing, we need more money for conservation efforts, etc., etc., no problem. You can say whatever you like. But if you start exposing the fact that the Australian-owned banks are bribing the local city councils in order to expedite consenting contracts, you get arrested in the middle of your dinner party with all your people, and you get held without charges for 3 days, and you get tied up in the Henderson police cells. These kind of things happen around New Zealand all the time. I've been doing it for about 10 years, and basically, if you're American, you know nothing about the world. Trust me, people who are in New Zealand know nothing about the world. Nobody does, because we ain't frickin' seen it. And essentially, it's like this. Imagine all the same kind of scumbaggery. Not the same scumbaggery, but the same kind of scumbaggery that is going on in your town, in your city, in your country, is the exact same kind of scumbaggery that's going on in New Zealand in very, very similar forms and formats, except it's got a slightly sexier accent.
Excellent. And you guys got great surf, too, right?
One can only hope.
Now, you've been doing this since like 2007, I think you said?
Yeah, roughly.
When you were back out in the streets then compared to now, how has it changed?
I don't really see a whole bunch of change.
No?
Like, honestly. The only change I see is just change for the worse, people continuing to ignore the truth, people continuing not to support the alternative media, and people continuing to want to go out and protest for issues that are of no consequence. And when they do go out and protest for issues about consequence, there is no media coverage or kerfuffle concerning it that lasts any significant period of time to make any changes. It's attrition, essentially. When you're at the coalface, it doesn't matter how hard you're fighting, it will always wear you down. And, I take extended breaks throughout the year because when I'm interviewing people about really terrible things that have happened to them, I actually try to care and be with them through this experience on my radio show because otherwise you don't really get to see the real person because they don't feel like they're talking to a real person. They think that they're expressing into a formatted program, right? But as a consequence, I take on a lot of the negative energy and a lot of the depression and a lot of the terrible things that many of the great people in our society that have actually done things that have changed the way I look at things. They're just damaged, and I get damaged too just talking to them. And so you've got to take time out to recuperate.
Mm-hmm.
Like Banksy said, you don't need to learn when to quit. You just need to learn when to have a break.
Yeah.
Step back and cleanse yourself from it in a way.
I've just seen so many people in the truth movement come and go, bro, because it's depressing. Because you're talking about the worst of the worst of the scumbagerical natures of humanity.
Yes.
Scumbagerical is even a word.
You help manage that by taking that weight on. When you step back, is it a combination of exercise or relaxation or
a bag of Cheetos and a football game?
It's a combination of weed.
Oh, excellent.
Yeah. As often as it can be done. Like,
is it legal in New Zealand?
Absolutely not.
Okay, so I've heard over recent years, say the last 10 years, in our alternative media and so-called conspiracy media, is that a lot of rich people have moved down to your country and have bought large estates and so forth. Is that true from your perception of things?
It's quite difficult to do so because you have to live here for at least 90 days out of every year in order to qualify to be able to purchase land here.
Hmm.
And the rumor started circulating like wildfire after, I think it was, James Cameron bought a large tract of land down here.
Hmm.
And everybody started saying this, blah, 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 there's rumors and so on and so forth. And I haven't really actually seen had any evidence in front of me to fully substantiate it. But at the time, one of my listeners had asked me how expensive farmland was in New Zealand, and I said, well, there's only two big pieces of farmland that are up for sale right now. One of them is being bought by James Cameron, and the other one is being bought by a giant Chinese conglomerate.
Mm.
And how are they getting away
and,
with that?
The alternative bidder for that one that was bought eventually by the Chinese conglomerate was a conglomerate of Kiwi investors headed by Sir Michael Fay, who is famously known for buying Kiwi assets and selling it to the Chinese, which is colloquially known as a Fay Dunaway.
See, in Hawaii, we've noticed that, and it may be just because of information flow, that we've had a lot of rich or extremely rich people buy in Hawaii, and they have bought large tracts, and have tried to kick the locals off their land.
Mm. Well, I mean, have you studied history? That's what it does. Rich people find really good places to live and then kick the poor people out and live there themselves. You know, well, pretty straightforward.
But what we would consider globalists, and that's kind of where I was going with this, because from my perspective, as you said earlier, the things that are going on now have been going on since the beginning. The big difference is we have more access to information than we did, say, 10, 20 years ago, let alone 50 years ago.
What's difficult to surmise about that is Let me just track back a little bit. The operations, the Secret Services, the OSS, which became the CIA, their entire reason for existing during World War II was actually sowing confusion. Right, there was this one time when they hijacked a train, a mail train that was bound for Berlin, with all these letters in it, and they replaced it with all these fake letters, and then sent the train back into Berlin. Right, really interesting to just sow confusion and make people so so unable to communicate clearly, and more specifically to trust those around them. Are not working for the enemy, there's no resistance that the Nazis could really mount against them. Now, they became the CIA, and now the CIA's target became the American public, and America's target become the world.
Hmm. Right? And they attack us during the 50s and 60s by starting to infiltrate our media.
Exactly, during Operation Mockingbird. So Walter Cronkite, who was like the most trusted man in America, more or less, delivering the news. If he said it, it's the truth. He was working for the frickin' CIA. Right? And there's no reason to suspect that the CIA stopped what they were doing, that they don't own a lot of the mainstream and alternative media today.
There's they were all screaming in our last election that it was the Russians, and the last four presidents we had been CIA assets.
Yeah. I mean, they're everywhere. It's intelligence agencies, military intelligence, and the secret societies are quite a big one, actually, because secret societies are often passed down by hereditary title, you know, from father to son. You know, you get invited into the lodge, you get inducted into it. And essentially, it's mostly just cult indoctrination. And this is a big realization I had last year, that cult indoctrination techniques are actually all pervasive. For example, if somebody's talking in a low, monotone, slow kind of voice, and there's fluorescent lighting that's not too bright and not too dark, and you're kind of feeling a bit sleepy, and if they're claiming that what they're telling you is the truth, you know, that's, oh my God, that's just four little things of cult indoctrination techniques, and you can all of a sudden start thinking about almost every single institution you've ever attended in your life.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. From your school to your work, it doesn't matter where you've gone, you're indoctrinated into a cult, bro. And the problem with that is once people have been indoctrinated into a cult, certain things happen to their brain chemistry, and which is what I call what's called complex post-traumatic stress disorder. So a whole bunch of the ways that you perceive reality are no longer actually valid. And I think maybe there was a concerted effort to ensure that this happened a lot more often throughout the ages to create a society that really couldn't fend for itself because it's so used to being indoctrinated from birth that they literally couldn't imagine another reality. Mm-hmm. And in fact, to even hear about another reality would appear insane.
Right.
Say what?
Our public education for the last 30 or 40 years.
Yeah, one can only hope.
Teaching us how to think to teaching us what to think. And now at our university levels, we have adults that are acting like children.
Mm. Now, education doesn't actually need to take a very long period of time, so far as I know. There's actually only a few things you really, really need to know. Basic maths and communication skills, and the ability to discern fiction from truth, right? And that's
a system in New Zealand. Are they all into the social justice stuff and pushing the green planet, or are they actually?
Oh yeah,
yeah.
I mean, you know, island nation in the middle of the Pacific. You know, who wouldn't be pushing the green nation Agenda 21 protocols? But
how did you first learn about Agenda 21?
Pardon?
How did you hear or learn first about Agenda 21? Was it through the internet? Was it through books?
Well, of course it was through the internet. I don't read books. I interview authors. I can't be bothered. You know, it's just like, give me the person who's got all the stuff in his head and let me just have a conversation with him just for the hell of it. You know, fuck it.
How old were you when you became aware of it is what I'm asking. Because, see, for me, it was a different story. It was before the internet, and I was a kid in grade school and talking to adults about World War II and this and that and the other thing and realized that there were certain subjects they didn't want to go down the path to because it made them uncomfortable to think of the conclusions they would draw from it.
Hmm.
And then by the time I was in high school, I had a pretty clear experience both via the military and my family and government and travel and seeing the world from different countries and different countries' points of views. In Hawaii, we have a lot of cultures, so we get a lot of cultural experience also. But I'd been overseas, and it was undeniable to me that there had been certain groups or organizations that had been steering us down the path, and I had read books prior to the internet that led me to the idea of Agenda 21, but it was basically called eugenics at the time, which goes back to like the 1850s, 1830s. Mein Kampf. If you read Mein Kampf, that's eugenics right there. That's Agenda 21 Bible for the Nazis. And it always surprises me because I can talk to most people my age or to the high school level. I'm over 50. So when I talk to guys that are younger, their 20s, their 30s, and 40s, and I ask them the simple question, do you ever read Mein Kampf? Not that I'm a skinhead or a white supremacist, but I always find it interesting. Everybody has a concept that, oh, yeah, I know what it is, but I've never read it. Hmm. And there's a reason why they don't really want anybody reading it. And it's not for the indoctrination. It's the insight.
It's because what he says is so very, very similar to what the government's now telling everybody is the right thing to do.
Other things, not to mention there were a lot of powerful people that supported that. Ford, Singer, Rothschilds, Rockefellers, Vanderbilts in our country. I don't know about industrialists, that many industrialists in your country, but I'm wondering if that's the same
effect. I'm where I used to live in Waiheke Island, there's a little street called Rothschild Terrace, and down the bottom of Rothschild Terrace, there are two very, very old mansions on either side of a big headland, and they're both pyramid-shaped with twin chimneys sticking out. So, you know, you connect the dots, and those things were built in, like, the late 1800s, I think, or was it middle of the 1940s? I forget or something, but allegedly, or at least the local legend, is that those Rothschild homes were built there just in case their coup attempt didn't go as well as they hoped, and they escaped to New Zealand.
Wow.
Now, that coup attempt that you're talking about, is that from like World War II, pre-World War II?
Smedley Butler during World War II appeared before the Congressional Committee. He's the only Marine to have ever won two Medals of Honor.
And I know who Smedley is. What's amazing to me is in this country, almost nobody knows who Smedley Butler is unless they studied military history or from that time frame. He literally saved our country from a revolution in this country.
Well, from a coup, a specific
they asked him
fascist coup.
He went along with it, and then he turned around, and then nothing happened to the people that he turned around on. He gave up his career and his life, basically, to try and save this country, and then the people that were involved in it were never prosecuted.
Yeah, and they still run the country today. They just started to run it through other means. They were like, okay, look, I know that we love the fascists, but we also love the communists, and the communists actually kill people more, and the communists come on slow, like a bad mold, and actually just stick around for just as long a frickin' period of time. So why don't we just make everything in America socialist?
Western banks funded China communism and Russian communism. They were funded by the West.
Mm-hmm.
And what's amazing now in this country, in California, just in this last month, we had politicians trying to legalize communism to make it cool. And all I can think of is, can anybody in history give me an example where communism was good for the guy on the bottom?
How can they legalize or...
It was made illegal to work in the government and be part of the Communist Party back in the day.
Hmm.
And so now they're trying to make it legal that you could be part of the Communist Party and still work in the government. They're trying to legitimize it. Much of the so-called social justice stuff we see going across this country, especially recently, but even further back to the 70s, has communist inklings. our last president that we had went to a communist church in Hawaii called the Little Red Church. It was called that not because it was red, but because they taught liberation communist theology.
Yeah. Oh, my, what big militaries you have.
All the better to keep control of you, my dear.
Than any president prior to. We also ran up a debt that is equivalent to the entire history's debt.
We had my prime sinister, or my ex-prime sinister now, we're in a country at $8 billion debt in 2008. He comes straight in from Wall Street, becomes the prime sinister, and he just stepped down at the end of last year, and he's being talked about to head the IMF, right? He got us at, okay, we're a country of 4 million people. He had 8 years from $8 billion debt. We're now in over $100 billion worth of the officially declared debt. Not including the cooked books, real data.
And nothing was fixed.
And not including the $112 billion worth of derivative debts that was on the books at the point in 2011, but haven't been reported on since. So we could be, you know, a lot.
How many years was he there?
Just still less than a trillion. Because in our country, we went from 9.6 trillion, and we're over 20 trillion now.
2008 to 2016.
8 years. Wow. Yeah.
In 8 years, we went into over $10 trillion in debt. And here's the thing. A lot of this goes back to the so-called housing bubble and stock market crashes where they needed bailouts and they never resolved those issues. Our real estate, the real estate bubble globally is somewhere in the neighborhood of $400 quadrillion. There's never been that much money in the entire world. We're living as debt slaves, basically.
Yeah, that's what we are.
The reason I ask you about what's going on in Australia is I've talked to these guys over the last month or so.
And remember, not Australia.
New Zealand, I'm sorry. But from your perspective down there, how much of your population is cognitive about what we're talking about now? Because in our country, I'm thinking it's somewhere between 5 and 10%.
I would say it's between maybe 1 and 2%. Yeah. Many of the revolutions throughout history, none of them have actually ever needed more than 5% popular support.
Our revolution was started with less than 3%, and we won it with less than 7%.
Yeah, so it was 3% was the minimum margin, and the 8% seems to be the maximum margin. Nobody actually ever gets to 10% popular support before they take over a country, especially if they're frickin' determined, because 90% of people just really don't want to fight. They don't want power. They don't like hurting other people and that kind of thing, so they mostly just stay out of it. Lead, follow, or get out of the way, as the old saying goes, right? But my sort of mission, as it were, is to sort of energize people and just go, hey, look, bro, I got into it with just a little handy cam and whatever, and I just make sure that I made videos every day, and you can do it too. Did a radio show, whatever. And you don't need other people to tell you what to do with your life, kind of thing. And ultimately, that's the one message that the government doesn't want people to know, is that you can really take control to a large extent over the things that you do in your life and what your life even means. You can make a difference just by doing the little things in your own everyday life in your own unique way. And people don't have that kind of faith in themselves, and that's why they've been made powerless.
Yeah, see, my hope is that at least in this country, we're able to get to that 5 to 10% awareness. But more importantly, I would like to think that globally, with people like you and people like Joel here and Dara, that we are able to wake the global populace up to a 5%. Because I think even though we don't necessarily need a blood revolution where everybody's killing everybody in the street. If a large enough percentage of the populace was aware, they couldn't do half the things that they're doing.
Yeah, exactly. And that's reaching that tipping point. And everybody trusts to hope in this grounds. But I don't know about you, but when I walk down the street, I don't see people with 9/11 was an inside job signs all the place, you know. I've never actually seen anybody protesting the New World Order in my country unless I've actually freaking like been invited or led the protest myself, kind of thing. Never, not once.
Yep.
When and, how many people have you had? What's the population that you know of in a protest or in a gathering recognizing what's going on? What is the number?
I don't know.
Couple
of handful, couple dozen, I think. I mean, it's just, look, it's a very high freaking benchmark, you know, like been interviewing people on the streets in activism. I've been interviewing doctors and lawyers and politicians and so on and so forth, nearly 10 years now. And what's difficult about summing things up is that everything is far more complex than you could ever hope to imagine. And there's always more information that goes into it. So when you say, do you have a general awareness of things? What would be the benchmark for that? Do you know the banking system? In fact, do you know that every single form of institution that has any kind of trust, authority, or large quantity of money is very, very likely merely a mind control cult that is currently killing you and brainwashing you into loving it? All right. Now, do you have that level of awareness?
Yeah, another topic you know,
like, enjoy your meal.
Yeah, eat yourself.
Well, the food that they're serving us is not always a meal. It's sometimes
chemicals.
Yeah, I wish you and I will pray for you. Although it may not matter to you, you might not believe. I have a lot of hope for the world, and it's a better 4-letter word than the one they're trying to give us.
Well. As George Carlin said, the only thing that was a real problem with me was that I had a stake in the human outcome. But now I just view the human outcome as a spectator sport and laugh accordingly.
Can you enlighten us on some other topics such as radiation and fluoridation?
Radiation and fluoridation.
In New Zealand? Have they fluoridated your water?
Almost.
Yeah, I did it in Hawaii a couple of years ago, and to protect your teeth, we're going to give you fluoride.
Yeah. Well, 6 months after what was it called? After Fukushima happened,
the tsunami.
We frequently tested the radiation in the waters off of New Zealand, a government mandate. You know, every week or so, and then they stopped. Right, 6 months after that Fukushima stuff started coming in through all the currents and everything, and it's like, okay, yeah, I don't really bother. Eat anything from the sea. I don't go swimming in the sea now. It's just kind of freaks me out just somewhat.
Absolutely, an iodine to your diet.
But what people don't realize is that the vast majority of the radiation that they're actually going to be exposed to isn't in the ocean. It isn't from Fukushima. It isn't from Chernobyl. It's actually all the stuff that you've got around you right now when you're talking on the internet, your wireless internet, your cell phones, electromagnetic frequency, wireless radiation is just as damaging, if not more, because it's constant, right? We had Paul Waddell from safespace.net.nz come into my house. I interviewed him a couple of times, so he offered to do my house for me for free, which is quite an expensive deal, really, because to have all the devices that you need, all the training that you need, etc., to be able to suss out somebody's house and make it safe from wireless radiation, that kind of thing, it's actually quite a high margin. So we got it down, and it was like, we've got 30,000 microwatts in this office here, and his recommendation is around about 4 microwatts, but the government recommended safe level is 1,000,000 microwatts.
What?
Okay. Their philosophy is that if it doesn't burn you or cook you,
you're okay.
It's safe. Right. So I was just sitting here going, oh my God, bro, what have I got? What have I got that's pulling out all this radiation? Ah, wireless keyboard. It's now a wired keyboard. Ah, yep. Wireless mouse. Now a wired mouse. Ah, yeah. we had the Bluetooth on the Mac as well. Turn that off. We had the wireless on the router. Turn that off. Yep. And take the portable handset phone out of the house. And that kind of thing is just like put 2 of these plug filters on, and we managed to get it down to about 15 microwatts per second. Nice. Right, and the problem with it is it's not just 30,000 microwatts coming out of, you know, all these devices all together. It's 30,000 coming out of the Bluetooth on the computer, the Bluetooth on the mouse, and the Bluetooth on the keyboard, and that's just when you've got one keyboard and mouse and computer in front of you.
Yeah.
Let alone the wireless router next to that. So you were getting all four of these pings at all of these extra levels. It's cumulative when it comes to your body. Yeah. Now, in New Zealand, there's only one place you can really go to get away from this, and that's go to live in rural areas where there's really bad cell phone reception to get away from it entirely. But through the New Zealand Rural Wi-Fi Initiative, they're going to make sure that there's wireless available the whole nationwide.
That's fucked up.
A question I got for you, Vinny, throughout your whole, wakening up of people, like, in the truth movement, have you seen any resistance from the powers that be? And
have you felt pushback?
Only when I'm shagging my wife. But the thing is, what
I mean, have you ever broached a subject that made you have someone knock at your door saying you shouldn't talk about it anymore?
Well, there's two kind of things that were sort of like, I wonder. For example, when I released John Key Exposed in 6 minutes, 2 weeks until the election, my entire YouTube channel got taken offline.
I remember that.
Yeah.
Purely that, right?
When I exposed Pete Santilli for being a FBI agent, my YouTube channel got a whole bunch of false copyright claims, and that got taken down. And, you know, it's come back subsequently twice. But the one that was interesting was when I was sitting there at the stove, you know, with some hot knives about to start smoking weed, and all of a sudden, uh-oh, that doesn't sound like a good knock, bro. And I like, look around, and there's cops right on my freaking porch, bro. I've, like, got the knives in my hand. Had I smoked weed just 1 second beforehand, it would have been all over. So I come out. And, hi guys, how you doing? You know, with my heart, it's just freaking out. And it turns out that they were there because I'd made a couple of posts that were anti-1080 poison on Facebook. And this person had threatened 1080 poison is something that we dump into our pristine bush and river. And it's one of the most toxic compounds known to man and can be an endocrine disruptor when it's in parts per trillion.
Mm.
And this is where people draw their water from. This is where the cities get their water from and that kind of thing. And I naturally say bad things about it. And they were just coming to see if I knew who had made threats of contaminating baby powder with 1080. Because I've been known to be anti-1080, and obviously I might know. And then I explained to them, dude, you do realize that what you've done here and what you're doing, you're actually causing a massive stress response to each and every one of these 1080 people that you're going to see, right? Like right now, I'm absolutely terrified of you guys. You know, my heart's going a million miles a minute just by your very presence. You know, and I've got their business card now and everything, and they were just like, you know, it's what happens when you have a conversation with me. I really kind of changed things for a little bit, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And that was a really freaky instance, and I thought to myself, you know, what's the chilling effect of that, you know? Or better not talk about 1080. So naturally, I started up an anti-1080 group directly after that.
And they didn't come knocking your door again.
No, they did not. Not yet.
Oh,
until they hear this broadcast.
I have you that instead of using knives and you start rolling joints, bro. It's much better for you.
If you say so.
How is your reception to authority figures, whether it be cops or politicians, as far as getting your message out and people actually listening to you?
No idea. Don't care.
Like changing someone's mind or something.
I'm the worst marketer in the world. Okay, I'm a great salesman, terrible marketer, because marketing and that kind of thing just involves more or less just deceiving people into thinking that you're something that you're not, so that you can implant something in their mind that they think they came up with. It's quite difficult to understand what the impact is, right? Mm-hmm. But I recall one time I was driving over to my mate's place, and radio doesn't work in the car, so I have to think while I'm driving. And I thought to myself, I wonder what I want to achieve after I'm dead. Oh, I know. I want to have, like, at my funeral or something, somebody come up who did a hell of a lot of activism work or something, saved a hell of a lot of lives, millions of lives, and said that there was this time in my life when I was really, really down on my luck. I didn't see the point to anything. I didn't see the humor in anything. And I was really, really miserable. And then this guy, Vinnie Eastwood, came along, and he taught me about the lighter side of genocide. You know, just because we're being exterminated doesn't mean we can't make it fun. And I then went on to do such and such and blah, blah, blah. The very next day, an author of a number of books about the covert depopulation agenda named Kevin Galilee, without even hearing this story, without me even telling them, posted a status on his Facebook saying almost exactly that.
That's exactly why I started watching your show as well.
Okay. Everybody does their shows for the masses. I do it for the one. Okay? The one is greater than the whole, as far as I'm concerned. It is our individuality and our own unique ability to contribute to the overall whole that makes us valuable and makes the overall whole have any value in itself at all.
Yeah.
If we're not all free, none of us are free.
Right.
Right? And so I don't want to be somebody's guru or that kind of thing. I just want to inspire them to go and do their own thing on their own speed so that they don't need people like me anymore to give them motivation to continue to do that.
Mm-hmm.
When you're self-propelled, when you are independent, then you are more or less free.
Yep.
Johnny Appleseed.
Yeah. But with more weed.
So,
but I always say, you know, some people don't react well to cannabis. Just like some, I've got a saying: some people shouldn't drink, and some people shouldn't smoke weed. But fortunately, I'm not one of those people.
Yeah.
Right. So, if you were to write a, if you were trying to write a book as to where you see the future of the planet or society, do you think we as a species are going to make it past the next 20 years or so?
I don't know. It'd be quite an interesting, you know, like a sci-fi book that's only set 20 years in the future called Everything's Screwed.
Well, we've had so many movies that said we wouldn't have made it this far. But
well, it could be predictive. It could be predictive programming as well, and that way it awakens people's fear centers in their reptilian brain, which is two layers underneath your neocortex, which is your primate brain, where all the thinking goes on. So, if you're afraid of a future that has not yet come, you'll be too afraid to figure a way out of it. And that's part of the idea behind all these disaster movies and that kind of thing. So I do want to, personally, that's actually what I want to do. I want to make really, really scary, horrible films that make people laugh really, really hard and make them think harder than they've ever thought in their life, right? And use the very poison that the enemy drips into our brain and then dispel the poison with a bit of humor and then use the trauma bubble in there to insert some ideas of independence and anti-authoritarianism.
I guess more directly the question would be, do you think we will end up all enslaved or all free?
Or all dunno. Dead.
It's the tortoise and the hare, bro. I mean, humanity's been the hare asleep underneath the tree for many, many years. And he's only just realized that he's been asleep. And now he's running toward the finish line, but the tortoise has been moving the whole time and he's almost there. It's just a question of whether or not we'll catch up to him. So, you know, short answer, I don't know. And I don't like making predictions because, again, living with a possible future in your head. What was it somebody said to me the other day? 90% of the negative predictions that we hear about the future never happen.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Well, positive is so much more powerful than negative.
And I'm not trying to corner you or anything. I'm just curious to your viewpoint, because I respect your view.
I have a really, really negative view of it, but that's only because I know what I'm talking about.
I have a still positive view, and I really do have an idea of what's going on, too.
It's just you know, it's hard to see it really well when you see so much bad happening all the time. But again, you know, it could be confusion or something like that. And I am unconcerned about the whole outcome in general. My wife's brother, he asked me, "Vinny, what do you think we're going to win?" And I go, "No." He goes, "Why do you keep doing it?" Moral obligation. Don't have a choice. It's the right thing to do. I must do it.
Exactly.
Just today.
It doesn't matter whether or not we win. It doesn't matter whether or not life is going to be better for everybody. What matters is that you fight every day for that better tomorrow.
Yep.
It's not about the finish line. It's about the race.
Yeah.
Right on.
Like a South African election.
Well, that's interesting, considering Mandela was the government's agent, wasn't he?
Yeah.
But when did he exactly die?
I have hope. I personally, on a personal level, I have hope. I think it'll get worse before it gets better, but then that's always the case with many things.
Yeah, that's my hope, too.
Yeah, I mean, where you're coming from, I was there about 10 years ago, and it's a lot more depressing when you think of. It was much more depressing when I used the logic in terms of the power versus the non-power. And then I came to the realization that, I can only control me. And that's an illusion, control being an illusion. But I also believe that as a species that we're rigged to survive.
I hope that we do survive. You know, I quite enjoy this planet. And a lot of the people in it. It's actually quite a fun experience because if you look out into the celestial bodies, there's trillions of galaxies out there, and each one of them is only a tiny little part of giant star clusters, which each and they're only tiny part of some other giant star cluster that's many, many times the size, just like weird giant versions of the cells in our bodies, and there's tiny little versions of them that live inside them. And more tinier live inside them. There's a whole fractal nature to this universe.
Inner and outer space is infinite. I do remember in the 70s having someone tell me, if you looked at the Milky Way, you could actually see it as part of an autonomy sketch of the human body. And that's only a small fraction of it. It'd only be part of the hand or part of the forearm, considering what's out there. I also remember talking to a lot of physicists and engineers from Los Alamos and White Sands, because my cousin worked there, and they were all positive that we're not alone, and statistically we're not alone. Mm-hmm. But they all had hope in the sense that the technology that would allow you and I to go to another planet so-called like ours and interact, our technology would be so much greater than theirs in theory if they were like us. They can't be hostile, because we're still here.
Yeah. Well, there's a growing theory among the scientific community that we're living in a hologram or a game or a simulation of some kind.
Yep. Yep.
And I'm just like, well, that actually does make a hell of a lot more sense than some of the other theories that get thrown around, you know?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, because
only through a distortion in some kind of programming code could you have so many of the weird instances that we have, all this all this ESP that there's a lot of evidence for, all these religious sightings and theories of angels and afterlife and all of that kind of stuff. Everybody goes, oh, it might be the religious reason, so I devote myself to that religion. Or it might be the scientific reason, so I devote myself to not having any religion, and only science is my religion now, and that kind of thing. Whereas I'm like, well, the only one that actually explains all the anomalies and all the different beliefs is if none of the beliefs are actually real and it's all part of a hologram simulation.
Like glitches almost.
Yeah.
If you've ever seen the movie Predator, when he goes through his color spectrum to look for things, I've heard doctors and scientific people in our actual culture or our time frame talk about the fact that even with our eyes and our ears and our senses, we're only perceiving a fraction of a percent of what's actually going on around us. Like I've actually had a doctor say, you know, we're actually living in a liquid atmosphere as human beings.
Mm-hmm. That's hydrogen in the air.
Yeah. And the oxygen in the air. So the whole idea of different frequencies and different perceptions dimensions.
Mm-hmm.
The dimensions, multiverses, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah. What this said to me...
We look at science fiction going back, say, 100 years or 200 years ago, almost all that science fiction is reality today.
Mm. It's true in many ways, and the whole question of the fractal universe, or whether it's a hologram or anything like that, was like, out of all of the infinite beings in the entirety of existence and the multiverse, I'm Vinnie Eastwood. Right? And that means I've actually got an obligation not only to all the infinite civilizations that live within me, but all the infinite civilizations and structures of the universe that I'm inherently a part of. Right? And that, to me, that sounds very encouraging, right? Not only can you just sit back and go for a second, this is what I actually am, and this is how far I've actually come. A lot of the people who get depressed don't have those two realizations very often.
And the fact that since you are part of it, you can affect it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, look at a car engine. Do you think there's any part in there that's not required?
I don't know. I had a British car back in the 80s. I bought the manual for it, and they had a section where there was a box that was connected to nothing, but they said if you took it out of there, it wouldn't work. So I didn't. But yeah, that's what also partially gives me hope, because like I said, 30, 40 years ago, I couldn't have a conversation with almost anybody about some of the subject matter that we've had just tonight.
Yeah. Well, and now that's another thing. I need to organize in bars and all of that kind of stuff, and actually just meet up together at people's houses and actually have house parties and that sort of thing. Because just meeting up with other truthers and that kind of thing is actually a very, very rare occurrence, but it's incredibly uplifting when it happens.
Mm-hmm. And it's happening more from my perception.
Yeah, I had one today.
Because of my background, I know a lot of educators and people in so-called positions of power, whether it's the military or the government. And it was always interesting to me the duality of the societies. I'll give you an example. When I was a young man and I sat in a small room with a bunch of pilots, they were talking about stuff then, and this is 40 years ago, that people still don't even know about today.
Mm-hmm.
A perfect example is the so-called fastest aircraft in the world travels 3+? The SR at Mach 3? And I remember in 1972 having a pilot tell me, yeah, we're slowing down to about Mach 6 or 7 just to come back in.
Hmm.
And then the engine on the SR is a jet engine, but it also has a ramjet. Well, a ramjet engine doesn't kick in till Mach 3. And the design for that ramjet engine goes back to World War II.
And even, what were they, the Learjet Corporation, they were experimenting with flying discs and things like that during the 40s.
Yeah.
Well, and so did the Germans. Well, the first jet aircraft, functional jet aircraft, was actually a British jet, wasn't it? Wasn't it the Comet? And they didn't fly it during World War II because they were afraid they'd lose the technology to the Germans. So they never really, they couldn't mass produce it, and they didn't use it.
Darryl, you want to sign us out?
Oh, we still got 5 minutes. We got started late.
Oh, okay.
But we do need to get Vinny to say some words in here somewhere.
Vinny, it's been a pleasure meeting you.
No, we're not wrapping up yet.
Well, thank you. I get that a lot.
That accent.
But anyway, Mr. Eastwood, you want to give us give listeners your social contacts and all that great stuff? You got the VinnieEastwoodShow.com is your website, correct?
Yeah. And if you search Vinnie Eastwood NZ on YouTube, You can get my YouTube channel with all the videos that I've made. Thousands. Many thousands. You can pretty much go onto the channel itself and then press that little magnifying glass that's on the channel and type in somebody's name, you know, like a big truther or something like that. Mm-hmm. You've been watching a lot of videos on lately, or a subject, you know, like fluoride or vaccines or chemtrails or whatever it is. Mm-hmm. Whatever's, as the Germans say, whatever keeps your Luftwaffe aloft.
I like the Luftballons.
That gave me a stitch in my side. But
Vinny, take hope, though. We have some alternative media in this country that are reaching millions of people a day now.
Mm. Well, so they claim.
Well, the trap.
Right. Right.
Half the struggle in marketing is to convince everybody that you've got credibility and are worth watching.
Yeah.
And one of the greatest and easiest and quickest tools is to say, we're the most popular, we're the biggest, we got millions of listeners and so on. And
oh,
so
no, forth. That's true.
When it might not necessarily just be that, it might be a cumulative effect, you know.
A good example, though, is there was a time when mainstream media would not acknowledge a lot of the alternative media. And in our country right now, we have the mainstream media now almost acknowledging on a daily basis those alternatives. And it's not theirs. It's not controlled opposition.
Yeah, I hear that term fake news being thrown around a lot lately. I'm like, yeah. Oh, my God. Of all the ghoulish things that you could possibly do, you know, the chutzpah that would be required for the mainstream media to call anybody else fake news. It's just the mind reels.
In this country, a lot of our mainstream news outlets are losing viewership. And if you go into their websites, they've disconnected conversational bars because everybody's calling them out every time they put anything up. Yahoo has done this too, where they'll put something up and they won't allow you to comment because they know the comments will shut it down rather quickly. I have a tendency to believe in our country, even though we just elected a billionaire, he's not part of the establishment. And I'll tell you why.
If you say so, bro. I mean, the Meyer Lansky Jewish Mafia were the ones that gave him his first casino, which he bankrupted. How do you bankrupt a casino, bro?
Right.
All right, he's in debt to the mafia. His best friends are the world's biggest drug dealers, gun runners, and human traffickers. Oh my God, it's just the amount of lies that he actually says, like objectively provable, easily found lies and simple crazy talk kind of thing. It's like, how could he possibly be more establishment? I wonder. Oh, wait, what if he put a whole bunch of Freemasons, members of the Council on Foreign Relations, and the Trilateral Commission, and the Council on National Policy, the new Christian Sharia law in America party, more or less, as almost all of the members of his cabinet.
He's got a few of the 300 now, too.
Here's an interesting thing. The mainstream media is attacking him so hard. Is that to give him more credit, or is it because they really didn't want him? Because he's not a CIA asset like Clinton would have been, like Jeb Bush would have been.
No, he's a Jewish mafia asset. He works for Israel, and Israel owns Washington.
That's an interesting perspective.
Yeah.
Not everybody of a certain organization is that organization, are they?
Well, sure not. But if you're only encountering people that are from that organization, if they're constantly lying and fulfilling the exact goals and means of that organization time after time, day after day, to keep excusing it and ignoring the it means that you're part of a cult of belief. And cults of belief are usually brought out by a lot of repetition. So if you've heard slogans and things of that nature, or if you've heard a certain idea denied several times or a certain idea promoted certain times, then you're dealing with a cult of belief. And it's designed to turn off your analytic brain and to go on automatic impulse and to not accept other contrary facts and ideas, and specifically facts. It's the problem with cognitive dissonance is that you will have a physical and emotional reaction if the facts contradict your belief system.
Yep.
Well, yeah, that's what we see happening a lot in our society. I was just wondering then, so he's part of it. Why is our media attacking him so vigorously? I mean, we have politicians screaming for his impeachment on things that you can't impeach somebody on.
Sure, but they did that about Obama too, and the media rips him shit out of Bush. Obama was
praised by most of our media when he first.
To a large degree, but on certain cases, they tried to take him to the cleaners. They did the same thing with Clinton. The thing is, a broken clock is right twice a day, right? However, the theory that I have working on this is that if you want to balkanize a society, you need a grand puppet show. And the most grandest of puppet shows are those when you have two of the worst possible most evil characters fighting against each other, so that you not only hate them both, but that the conflict between them creates even more hate between the different groups that those people represent. Mm-hmm. And now I'm having a look at all these huge communist protests and these Antifa, and it's also just kind of becoming a alt-right wing versus the ultra left wing, sort of everybody at each other's throats. And the U.S. establishment couldn't have really actually asked for a greater gift.
So this is what they're trying to achieve in our culture right now. Do you believe it'll lead to a civil war in this country?
Well, one can only hope.
Oh, okay. what is your perception on Putin?
Well, it's like fake alternative media. You only get out what you put in.
And with that, I'm going to close this out. We got to end on some good humor right there.
I'm really curious to what his viewpoint on Putin is. Is Putin part of the global order?
I reckon so.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay, go ahead, Derek.
Aloha.
Aloha.
Thank you, Pat, though. I do appreciate you joining us, and you've always got a great insight to things as well and an alternative perspective. Joel, once again, my main man, thanks for coming on. And Mr. Eastwood, Vinny Eastwood, thevinnyeastwoodshow.com. You can find information about him as well. Thank you, sir, for coming on. Really, really appreciate it.
I'm Vinny Eastwood, the man with a rhythm within him.
Very good. And everybody for who is listening on the radio right now, don't forget you can catch this episode up on youtube.com/user/Third Eye Radio Network. Check out the Mokita Report playlist, and we'll catch you again next week, same time. This has been Third Eye Radio Network production.